Today is Thursday. It's July 26, 2018. It's 11:14 in the morning, and I'm John Williams. This is The Mincing Rascals, a podcast we record in the studios at WGN Radio. You can hear me weekdays from 1 to 3 on WGN and Saturdays from 10 a.m. until 12 noon.
I'm Kristen McQuarrie, a member of the Chicago Tribune editorial board.
I'm Steve Bertrand, host of The Business Lunch on WGN.
I'm Eric Zorn, the inappropriate columnist from the Tribune, and I run Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays.
Let's not ask him why he said
no,
that.
No, he's going to start shouting his questions when he's asked to leave. I know
that's not what it is. We're going to have to kick him out, uninvite him to the next Mincing Rascals.
We're going to go to Trump land at the end of the podcast for a change, Eric, but that was a reference to the reporter that shouted a question at the president and got kicked out of the ensuing press conference.
It was.
Or denied access.
Denied access.
To the next one, yeah.
By the way, shouldn't... this is
never works.
There we go.
But shouldn't... this happened more recently when Donald Trump was addressing the press corps, I think it was, and a person from CNN or NBC had a question, and the president said, no, I'm not going to call on you, you're fake news.
It was overseas, it was the CNN reporter.
Okay. It was Jim Acosta.
And so then the next reporter is Fox News, and a lot of national media types said that the correct position for the Fox reporter would have been to say, thank you for calling on me, Mr. President. I hope that you will call on me next, but I'd like to defer this opportunity to my colleague. You know, take it away from the president and put it back.
He put out a statement because he did get criticized for that. But I think if you watch the tape, you see that it's clear Trump is not going to ask the question. So then he needs to get his question. And the Fox News reporter, he did put out a statement later saying it was wrong of the president to do that. But
he said that. The Fox reporter said that
it was wrong. Yes. But he got his question and then everybody else started asking their question. So it wasn't just him. But this has been an issue from the beginning, right?
One of these days I would like to see the press corps en masse.
Right. Well, I mean, it's delicious for the press to criticize the others for not doing it. I haven't seen any of them do it yet, right? I mean, I haven't seen any reporter stop and say, I'm going to go back to this guy.
Is it because maybe their editor is going to go, wait a minute, you had a chance to ask the president a question?
Well, especially Fox, I think it would have been tough.
Well, they're competitors, too. You know, they're not, I know that they personally hang out together and they might be considered friends, but they're competitors.
Don't you think there's a sort of esprit de corps, though? It is the press as one, even though we're competitors. Don't you think their allegiance to journalism?
I would hope so. I mean, they are competitors, but at the end of the day, they're all ostensibly pulling on the same oar, right? Which is to tell the truth and get the story out there. And if you have a White House that's trying to manipulate and divide the press like that, or the media like that, it's bad in the long run for all of them. It's a short-term loss of your little question for a long-term gain. So,
a couple of weekends ago, activists shut down part of the Dan Ryan. Now they want to shut down Lakeshore Drive during Lollapalooza on a game day for the Chicago Cubs. And they'll start over by Grant Park and then go up and all the way over to Clark. They will end at Wrigley Field during a Cubs game.
You said they, and it's a different group. The first group was led by Father Flager. And he is distancing himself from this next march. He doesn't share its goals because the goal of this next march is to convince Rahm Emanuel and Eddie Johnson, the superintendent of police, to resign. And Father Flager is not down with that. So these are sort of competing groups that are doing this. And the point that the new group is making, which is that, it was an inconvenience to people to have part of the Dan Ryan closed for an hour on a Saturday morning. But we are going to bring, I believe their expression is, are going to bring the pain up to the north side. And because this is not just going to be an inconvenience, it's going to be a real nightmare, traffic nightmare for a lot of people. But they felt like, and I think they could be right in retrospect, if you look back on it, like it was kind of a dramatic thing to march on the Dan Ryan. But really, you know, they've had people go off onto State Street and no one's, you know, just life went on pretty much as usual after that. It was not as big a deal as people thought. Will be a big deal.
So are you for it or against it, Eric? Yeah. Are you for freedom of expression and allowing people to express themselves in this way, civil, peaceful protest? It's not good now because it's going to impact your side of town.
Oh, well, I wonder where she's coming from. It's the south side.
I'm northwest, so it's not going to impact me, but it's going to affect John probably. No, I mean, I think they have a right to do it, and I think, I guess my first reaction is, go for it. you know, make a splash, because this is going to make a splash. It's going to, you know, really bring people's attention to this matter in a way that the other markets.
Well, you can do whatever you want, too. I mean, you don't have to ask for permission, right?
I want to know if Kristen is just baiting me. Are you in favor of this march?
No, yes, I am. And okay. I was in favor. I said march every Saturday. My point was just follow up your march with changing over your government if you don't like A, B, C, and D.
Well, you're in favor of shutting down the major roadways? I'm just surprised you are. I didn't know that that's where you were. Yeah.
You should read my column, Steve.
Are they in the paper still?
She doesn't mention them in her intro, so we don't. So people
yeah, no. Yes, I have no problem with people with the Dan Ryan protest. It was an inconvenience on the south side. So if this is what they want to do on the north side, I think you're going to be in a very delicate situation if you're going to say, like, all the white people going to Cubs games and coming home from work, we don't want to disrupt their lives, but it was cool to do that on the Dan Ryan.
But not everybody felt that shutting down the Dan Ryan was the right idea either. There was some division among some of the pastors on the south side. Not all of them are with Father Flager. We talked about that on this show, and at least one position put to us was that this isn't the mayor's fault, this isn't the governor's fault, this isn't white people's fault that are inconvenienced going to a Cubs game or coming into the city. It's a neighborhood problem that we have to address, and it's wrong-headed to think, okay, they're going to go fix it for us because we inconvenienced
them. Where's their pride or pride of protest? Shouldn't they come up with something unique? I mean,
this is pretty unique. I mean, the thing is that they, for years, they've been marching down like side streets in various neighborhoods, you know, taking back the night and protesting violence, and it hasn't done any good.
Well, that's because they don't have a solution. I don't know that it's their job to, right? Like, if you're a neighborhood that's been traumatized or victimized, you hate that. The solution, right, is jobs and education and healthy families.
Well, they were also saying during the Dan Ryan protest, put down the guns. It wasn't just a protest against government and ROM, and it was a protest for shooters. You know, we need to live in peace.
And also, you know, they say they want to get Rahm Emanuel to resign and Eddie Johnson to resign. If you want those guys out of office, what you got to do, as along with your marching, is you got to register people to vote and vote them out of office, because Rahm Emanuel is coming up for re-election next year, and the next mayor is going to be able to appoint the police superintendent.
And Eddie Johnson and Rahm Emanuel are the next two can fix this? I mean, is that the solution?
People are frustrated. There have been 20,000 people shot in the city since 2012. They feel like they have no recourse. And if this builds some sense of community and brings a sense of purpose, then yes, they should be doing. I mean, Rahm Emanuel should be focusing on the crime in the city every single hour of every single day. He is the mayor. I understand the frustration that they feel.
Knowing full well that that's not going to fix anything either.
Right. Right. Yes.
Well, this is the thing. We talked about this before about protests, and you have things like Occupy Wall Street, which was this sort of explosion of anger and frustration, but it ended up really not getting anything accomplished or any attention being changed. That you have to keep up this sort of sustained effort, and it has to have, in the end, it's got to be a political solution. In the end, what matters is, you know, where the resources go when you're talking about neighborhoods, where the investment's going, where the jobs are going, how the schools are going, all those things. And all those things are ultimately come back to the politicians who run things. And so, you know, in that sense, I think Kristen makes a very good point.
Steve, don't you think it's all wrongheaded anyway, because Rahm Emanuel's not going to be the next mayor, because Pat Quinn's going to get that resolution passed or whatever that is? Rahm's not going to be able to run. There's a petition drive.
Willie Wilson bought my vote, so.
Yeah, you don't vote in Chicago. You're not a Chicagoan. Speaking of running for office, Kristen, tell us the Willie Wilson story that you wrote about this week.
I just wrote a column. It was tongue-in-cheek, but saying that Willie Wilson and Bruce Arnold, you're doing it all wrong. You don't buy votes out in the open like that. You don't have a wad of cash in your hand. You don't televise it. You don't, you know, send video to the TV station. You do it the way that the incumbents always do it. You pass out grants to neighborhoods like Pat Quinn's anti-violence program.
Who's Willie Wilson?
So Willie Wilson, candidate for mayor, was Sunday at a church doing what he has done in the past. He is a philanthropist. He has a foundation. And he just wants to give money directly to people who are hurting due to property taxes. But
right. So it's a $100,000 property tax abatement program where he literally hands checks to people, right?
I think
or
it would
cash.
Total.
Cash.
It was $300,000 total. It was like $40,000 or nearly.
And, but yes. Didn't $100,000 of it come from Governor Rauner?
Yes.
So Rauner gives $100,000 to him, and now he's handing out maybe Rauner's money, maybe not, to people as he's running for office.
Yes.
So it looks like, hey, come to church. Hey, I'm so glad you're here. Here's some money. Have a nice day.
It looks like he's
paying for votes, mm-hmm. which you're not supposed to do.
It's a felony.
But but he's not paying for votes. He's giving people money to help with their property tax.
Mm-hmm. Pick a lane. If you're going to run for office, you should not be handing out cash.
And the governor was with him, right?
Wasn't yeah.
He?
Yeah.
He was there, but he wasn't there during the money handout.
And then when he found
he
out.
He came and how spoke, and then he left.
And then when he found out how the money was used, he was outraged.
He said it was outrageous.
He should have been paying a little bit more attention to Willie Wilson over the years, because he has, as Kristen yes. points out, he's been doing this for a long time when he wasn't running for office. Willie Wilson is, as you asked, he's a self-made millionaire. I mean, we talked, I think, about what the term self-made and how it's overused or misused. Willie Wilson truly is a self-made guy. I mean, he started as basically with nothing, and he came up and he bought one McDonald's franchise, and now he's a very wealthy businessman. And he ran for president, and he ran for mayor before. And he seems to, he's not a very, fine-spoken man or anything, but he does seem to have this touch with people. And I don't look for him to win the office, but I think he's going to get more votes than people think. We talk about, we're not okay with giving cash directly to voters. We find that unseemly. But the whole political process is unseemly by those standards. I mean, these rich guys, especially the plutocrats who are running for governor, they're essentially handing out, they're trying to buy votes indirectly by spending, hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars buying ads. And that's sort of another way of buying votes. It's once or twice removed from actually handing people cash.
Right,
but it might be more efficient to just do it that way.
Well, at least Wilson's being transparent about it. Rauner's kind of laundering it through Wilson. I mean, what's Rauner's interest? I'm sure he'd like to help the downtrodden out, but he's running for re-election.
Well, I don't think Rauner thinks he's going to get credit for Willie Wilson handing out money.
Well, he gave him $100,000.
Right, but I don't think that's why.
Really, you think that was pure philanthropy on the governor's part?
No, I think he was. I think he's more looking for sort of general support in the African American leadership community by showing that kind of philanthropic effort.
Okay, but
so he's just buying a different product.
Yeah, exactly.
If you want to look at it that way, what we're discounting is the possibility that any of these people could actually really feel like they've got money and they want to put it to some use I know this sounds really uncynical of me, but it could be that some of these people, especially I think it's true of Willie Wilson, that he really does care about these people who don't have much money.
I don't think Willie Wilson thinks he was buying votes.
I think Rauner does. I mean, I'm surprised at your lack of cynicism. Don't you think that Rauner's got an agenda and it's pretty clear?
I think Rauner's making these donations or warming up, wasn't it, with Cory Brooks and things like that, sure, to make inroads in the African-American community for votes. That's probably behind the donation, but I don't think he's thinking, I'm going to give Willie Wilson $100,000 and he's going to hand it out at church on Sunday.
I don't know. What does he think he's going to do? And
I think it's more that the governor can say, look, I gave this money to this program.
He did just win a national award from the NAACP for black entrepreneurs for some of the programs that he has tried to start in state government and get more minorities involved in contracting. I just think you can't apply a double standard. We can't say this is okay for Willie to do it because we like him and he's nice and we're going to give him the benefit of the doubt, but we're going to hold Rauner's feet to the fire. I mean, we can't do that. If it was wrong for both of them, it was wrong for both of them.
On a much less important but equally controversial topic, at a Cubs game, a ball was tossed to a child, and the child missed the ball, and it rolled under the seat or bounced away, and the guy in the back row got it. And that was seen on national TV, and everybody criticized that guy for not handing the ball back to the kid. And Twitter and broadcasters all blew up on this unnamed gentleman and his wife or girlfriend that was sitting next to him. We then learned via Twitter that that guy had previously been able to snag a ball for that little boy and had given out balls to other kids. In fact, the very ball that we saw on TV may have been given to a child, but in that moment, it looked like it was just one of those who took the ball from the kid and kept it, and everybody rips on him.
The video was not a good look. Okay,
The video was a perfect look of that scene.
I mean, he throws the ball to the I forget who was it, the coach or the ball boy. I can't remember who was.
It was
a coach. He throws the ball right to the little boy. The little boy, because he's not got good glove yet, bobbles it. It goes under his seat, and then the guy behind him just kind of like dives on the ball like frantically and takes it and pulls it back and like, ha ha, I've got it. And in some ways, I don't care how many balls that guy has given to that little boy earlier in the game. It just had this look like the ball was thrown to that boy. And so the boy gets two balls, fine, but the whole body language and everything of that guy, I mean, it was quite striking.
People lose their minds.
It was quite striking.
But John's point is that we didn't get the full story. And everybody jumped on it before you had the context.
Yes.
And that's why it's important to wait and have context before you freak out on social media, right? Is that the lesson?
I wonder about that because I don't think I freak out on social media. And that's a good lesson to have, to learn, you know, not to react too quickly to things. But I also think sometimes there are just instances where it's perfectly understandable why people reacted the way they did, because we were presented with pretty compelling evidence. I mean, this wasn't, you know, a conspiracy theory or someone making any sort of leap. It looked like we saw it all.
To pass judgment on that scene.
So maybe this is a case of sometimes things happen, and this was one that happened that shouldn't have. Not that we shouldn't learn not to learn more before we react, but I don't know if this is a good example of that, just because it was so...
And the Cubs obviously thought there was something weird about it, because they went and gave him a Javi Baez signed ball.
Baseball.
I think the kid drove home in a new Chevrolet. I mean, the kid was made whole.
The kid was made whole. And you know, I mean, as much as I jumped on the guy too. I mean, I thought, this guy's the worst guy in the world. You know, this is terrible. And when I found out the context, I said, well, okay, now I see that this guy, you know, I see the broader context. But I also, looking at that video again, I think, like, how can you not think that ball was meant for that boy?
And even, right.
Just because he got a ball earlier.
I think that's a good point, Eric, that regardless of the context, the ball was intended for the kid, and the guy didn't give it back to the kid in that moment.
And he presumed to give it to whoever he wanted to give it to.
Not in that. Well, whatever. Yeah. You know what? The mother of that child said, hey, we're cool.
Yes.
We have no problem with what happened.
We also saw the coach tossing it toward the boy. He wasn't looking that way. He saw the coach tossing it. I don't know what he saw. You know, he might have seen something differently, but
I can just imagine what the 24 hours after that were like for that guy. You know, I mean, his family, his friends, some trolls found him, because they will. You saw the video this week of the man, was it in Bronzeville, climbing a fence, and we had the police video from the camera on the police officer, and the guy is climbing a fence, and there's the cop, and his gun is drawn. And that man climbing the fence is not pointing a gun at the police officer. They're maybe 10, 12 feet apart, and the officer shoots him and he dies.
Well, since we're on the subject of not jumping to conclusions, I still think these police videos, even edited versions that the Chicago Tribune edits a lot of these videos down. When you don't have the context, they were chasing him on foot for some time. There was talk on all the radios that he had a gun. Does it look awful? Yes. I don't think disobeying police should be a fatal offense, no matter what. I know that they keep saying, just comply. I'm sorry. I think life is precious, and I don't think that disobeying or in a chaotic moment, not understanding what police are asking of you, like the case of the man in South Shore, that you deserve to die for that. I know I'm coming from like mixed minds here, but I want to hold off because I do know there was more leading up to that moment, but I keep coming back to that same conclusion.
Yeah, I would hold off too, except that one thing that the police will make this point, and I think it's a valid one, is if you think someone is armed and has used that gun, and we don't know exactly what, had he fired it before or something, but
they were doing a drug investigation and he started to run away.
Okay.
So he drew attention to himself and then they had a foot chase.
If they know that he's got a gun, then he is presumably a threat, a lethal threat. And when can you use force? This is going to be the defense in the Laquan McDonald case. He had a knife. He was going off into the neighborhood to stab people. We had to stop him. I mean, it really boils down to this sort of split second judgment. And again, it's like you want to hear from all sides before you really, you know, before you make a judgment, because it's such a serious judgment to make on somebody. You know, to go back to the Wrigley Field thing, like people are just like, this guy's a bum, you know, and then, he's not a bum. And then no harm, no foul, right? It's over.
Yeah, but that guy's climbing the fence. Even if he has a gun in his back pocket, he's not reaching for the gun. You don't see the gun. In fact, there's a fence between him and the officer.
And it conflicts with what CPD initially said. I think that's another big problem. CPD said, right, after this incident that he had a weapon drawn, or the tape doesn't match with what they said. And that's a big problem.
Again, I know, that happens all the time.
I'm amazed after Laquan McDonald that, as these guys know that the video will tell the truth or a truth, and it might be in conflict with what they're saying, I'm amazed that they either don't say the truth of what happened right away, or that they behave so badly that they're making these sorts of aggressive, heat-of-the-moment mistakes.
I don't know what the police training is on this. I don't know what police training is on this, and I don't know what we would want police guidelines to be. If someone has an open weapon and they're running away, Is this cause to use force on them, or you just like let them run off with their gun? I don't know what the policy is, and I don't even have a strong opinion as to what it should be.
Well, I think they're trained to shoot. shoot to kill.
Center mass.
Oh, no,
center
mass. They're always trained to shoot to kill. There's
but why?
Shoot to
I've never really understood that. Why aren't they trained to like shoot
why
in the leg?
Why are you
going to
shoot the guy at all? Because you feel like your life is in imminent danger.
Or someone else's life.
Well, and like I said, we don't know what was in the officer's ear, what he was hearing about this person being
I just
armed.
Think the officers get pissed off. You know what? You didn't do what we told you to do. You're a bad guy. We're running after you. My life is in danger. You might shoot me, and now I don't like what you're doing, and I just think rage controls their actions too often.
Oh, I don't think so.
I think adrenaline certainly figures into
fear.
It. Fear. It's rage.
Okay.
And some anger,
well,
too.
Maybe that's my description of rage. But adrenaline and fear and anger. You're telling me these guys aren't angry at what's going on? Let's go to Trump land for a second then. 2 weeks ago was his weirdest week. Today is Thursday. I'm not sure how this one's going to be scored. But
Trump's one of the reasons why we put a timestamp on this podcast, because we never know what's going to say in the afternoon. And it's like, why didn't they talk about when he pulled his pants down?
This is the week, at least, we could comment on this, that we have the audio of his former attorney, Michael Cohen, taping him when they were trying to figure out how to pay off Karen McDougal.
I need to open up a company for the transfer of all of that info regarding our friend David.
So what are we going to pay?
Funding. When it comes time for the financing.
What financing?
We'll have to pay you. So
I'll pay with cash.
No.
Check.
I wasn't overly impressed with the recording.
I mean, it was cash or check was really what it came down to.
It established that
Trump knew.
That he knew, and that he was talking about putting things off, but it was established that he knows about these payoffs. But look, it was established that he grabs women, you know. That was on tape, too.
Right, but if you're trying to make the case that there's a campaign violation here.
Yeah, but it would be...
At least you have some evidence of that, that he was aware that money was going to be paid to this woman.
Right.
So how do we handle the accounting of that?
Whether it's a cash or check, it was through an LLC, right? It wasn't from him.
Said, I need to form a corporation, and I'm going to do this thing, and he was...
But it was never done, right? And I don't think the payment was ever made.
Oh, to McDougal? You don't think she was paid $150,000? I'm pretty sure she was.
I heard somewhere that the payment, she was paid by the National Enquirer. This was a payment maybe to the National Enquirer to get the information.
Okay, so we only care about this because it might establish that Trump is a liar. Okay, we already know that. So why are we spending so much time on it?
I don't know.
I'm not that impressed with it. Unfortunately, not everyone agrees that Trump is a liar yet.
Well, it also suggests, one reason why it's so interesting, it suggests that if this tape was in the possession of Michael Cohen, that he must have a lot of... If he's taping routine interactions like this, or semi-routine interactions like this, there may be a whole cache of material in his possession, now in the FBI's possession.
Eric, do you think that the Mueller investigation's taking too long?
No, I don't think it's taking too long.
What do you think, Kristen?
Yeah.
You think it's taking too long? How about you, Steve?
Absolutely not. It's a fraction of what other special investigations have gone, how long they've gone on. I don't have the details in front of me. How many people were indicted in Whitewater? And I don't bring that up because it's of the Clintons, but how many people were indicted in Whitewater? Were there a handful?
There were some, yeah.
Yeah, there have been 30 so far in Mueller's investigation.
But none having to do with collusion.
Yeah, ostensibly, he's not directly investigating Trump, but he's investigating the Russian meddling in our elections. So.
Right, but I mean to say, well, we don't have collusion. I just think collusion is sort of the end of the train here, isn't it? You find meddling.
You find obstruction of justice.
Well, that's it. So the fact that you haven't done it yet, the next rock may actually turn that over.
Why do you think it's gone on too long, Kristen?
I just think the original scope was to try to link his campaign to colluding with the Russian government to sway the election. And I just feel we've gone far afield of that. Even the indictments of the people close to Trump and who were on the campaign for a short time, a lot of the indictments are about banking and real estate corruption and things they did long before they were even part of the Trump.
Well, first of all, they weren't on the... You're sounding like the president when you say they were on the campaign for a short time. Manafort was running the campaign.
For like five months. Okay.
That don't diminish it. Flynn was with him for quite a long time
like
on the campaign
weeks.
Trail.
He had an official role.
Yeah, an official role, but he was his whisperer through the campaign. I'm just saying, so don't diminish them in that way. I mean, I think they were pretty close. Carter Page, I don't know about Carter Page, how much time he spent. The president said he was one of his experts. He said that for Papadopoulos. But I don't think it's been a long investigation at all when you look at others like
him. And I don't understand why we're so upset if it takes a while. I mean,
that's my question for Kristen.
Why is this a problem?
Do you think it's possible that the Mueller investigation will, in fact, determined that there was collusion?
No.
That's a possibility?
No. And I guess I have no... I don't think the Trump campaign had the wherewithal to collude. I think it was a bumbling group of people like Steve Bannon and kind of
Corey
this,
Lewandowski.
This
well, Carter Page and Roger Stone.
Traveling group of
these guys,
clowns
yeah.
who never ran a campaign and didn't know what they were doing and agreed to this meeting at Trump Hotel. I just don't think that they had the capacity
well,
to actually
maybe
do
they
something
tried to
like
collude.
That.
Let me see. That's where I want to go. So what is collusion? Is collusion, I mean, in my book, they colluded. If they took a meeting with Russian operatives who were promising dirt on an opponent, they didn't do a very good job of it. Maybe that's not prosecutable or indictable or any of that, but they sat down with the Russians to try to influence the election. They did that.
Yeah, if you tried to rob a bank
by their
and you
own
didn't
emails,
pull it off,
they admit
you still
that.
Tried to rob
they,
a bank.
They thought supposedly that they were going to talk about something different and they left. Okay, anyway, I don't want to relitigate the whole Trump Hotel thing.
But I'm saying that's where there was collude. They did collude there. It might not have been a very good job, but they have done that and they've been...
Yeah,
I don't think sitting down for a meeting is colluding. And I'm sorry, but we meddle in ever. So we keep using this word. We meddle in other nation elections. And Russia is trying to undermine our democracy. So they do Facebook ads and they love to stir the pot, but they were doing it on both sides. They were trying to hack into the Republican email election system too. Finish it and move on, because now we're moving into another election cycle and we still have this all hanging over our heads.
I would like it if he finished up by Labor Day, because if he doesn't finish up by Labor Day, he probably will not do any kind of announcements in October. He won't do a Comey, you know, like October surprise kind of thing. I think Mueller seems like a very probative fellow.
Do you think
fellow.
He should? So should he manage it relative to the election? Or
that's been traditional until this last election cycle. It's fairly traditional for these kind of things to go quiet right before major elections.
Wait. Let's do our recommendations, Eric. Anything that you want to pass along that you're enjoying these days?
Yeah, you know, I've been watching on Netflix when I'm on planes. Usually, it's a series by Oliver Stone called The Untold History of the United States. And, you know, Oliver Stone, I know he's kind of loony, but these are just fairly straightforward. And they're not like Howard Zinn kind of all kind of the America's Terrible stuff. But it's just sort of an interesting perspectives on historical events. And it sort of takes us through World War I, World War II, and so on. It's just interesting. And in like hour-long segments. So,
how about you, Kay? Anything you like?
Oh, I'm embarrassed to say what I'm hooked on right now.
It's going to be a cocktail, we know.
No, it's a terrible, terrible show. American Woman. Have you watched any of it?
I don't know that one, no.
So it's a jumping off point from one of the women who's on Real Housewives of the OC, or one of those. She grew up in sort of this ritzy, glamorous environment, but then the father ended up leaving the family. And anyway, it's with, I don't even know people's names. Anyway, American Woman. It's kind of trashy TV, but
well, I'm going to
really
watch
compelling.
It.
maybe a nice escape. What about you?
I'm reading a book called The Yard. By Alex Grecian, and it's about the early days of Scotland Yard, or right after the Jack the Ripper murders. So, you know, I'm kind of in a British funk, but I'm recommending it because of the dedication. I'm assuming this is Alex's wife, Christy. He dedicates it this way: for Christy, who will inspect this dedication for plot holes, which I just think is hilarious.
For plot holes.
Maybe I'm the only one, but we're okay. I'll work on another one.
Okay.
there's no wrong answers here. I was actually going to do, I think I did the Aperol Spritz last time.
I thought cottage cheese was really the wrong answer.
We should do a list of worst recommendations from the gang, and cottage cheese would make my top five, Eric. But now there's an Aperol drink that I haven't tried yet, but I'm going to this weekend, and it's Aperol with vodka. You make an Aperol martini, like two parts of vodka, one part of Aperol, and I think you splash it with a little bit of Prosecco.
Ooh, that sounds lovely. Thank you.
And that's this week's podcast. Thank you, Eric Zorn. Thank you, Kristen McQuarrie. Steve Bertrand exited stage left. He's going to be on the radio. My friends are going to go write at the Chicago Tribune. Ben did not produce today's or engineer today's podcast, but there is our producer and, I guess, sort of engineer today, Elif Garris. And I'm John Williams. We'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online at WGNradio.com. Plus, catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.